Senate will come to order. Messages from the House.
February the 26, 2009, Mr. from the House of Representatives, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 71, Film Industry Financial Incentives, ayes 57, noes 3. House Bill number 100, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, ayes 59, conflict 1. House Bill 242, Off-Road Vehicle Definition, ayes 58, noes 2. House Bill 261, Mandatory Savings Account for Inmates, ayes 54, noes 6. And House Bill 271, Medicaid Speech and Audiology Services, ayes 60. February the 6th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 96, Railroad Quiet Zones, ayes 60. House Bill number 152, Athletic Trainers Licensing, ayes 49, noes 11. House Bill number 222, Establishment of Private Roads, ayes 60. House Bill number 223, Bullying Prevention, ayes 50, noes 10. House Bill 229, Court Security Reimbursement, ayes 60. House Bill 114, Community Colleges Amendments, ayes 58, noes 2. And House Bill 234, Property Tax Assessed Value, ayes 38, noes 22. February the 6th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 234, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Joint Resolution number 17, Defense of Marriage, ayes 25, noes 35. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, we have with us today visiting from around the state the board from the Wyoming Association for Career and Technical Education. They've come down here. They have a board meeting here, and they're come down to watch the proceedings. So if you'd all like to welcome them to the Senate here from up in the gallery.
Welcome to the Senate. House Bill 261, first reading of a bill.
House Bill number 261, Mandatory Saving Accounts for Inmates, sponsored by Representative Bagley, an act relating to Department of Correction inmates. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 54, noes 6.
House Bill 261 had been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 100, first reading of the bill.
House Bill Number 100, Select Water, Omnibus, sponsored by the Select Water Committee, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, an act relating to water development projects. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, conflict 1.
House Bill 100 have been referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 242, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 242, sponsored by Representative Buchanan. Off-road vehicle definition, an act relating to motor vehicles. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, noes 2.
House Bill 242 have been referred to committee number 8, Transportation. House Bill 71, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 71, sponsored by Representative Berger, Film Industry Financial Incentives, an act relating to film industry incentives. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 57, noes 3.
House Bill 71 have been referred to committee number 9, Business. House Bill 271, first reading of the bill.
House Bill number 271, sponsored by Representative Berger, Medicaid, Speech and Audiology Services, an act relating to Medicaid. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 60.
House Bill 271 have been referred to committee number 10, Labor. Considerations of bills in general file, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. We are at that point of business. Considerations of bills in general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passed. Senator Devon Platerin.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 87. Will the reading clerk please read it in?
Senate File number 87, sponsored by Senator Jennings, Wolf Brucellosis Testing, and Act Relating to Game and Fish. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, and Johnson. No, Senator Vasey, Senator Geis, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 87 do pass, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Jennings to explain the bill.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate File 87 pass with favorable vote. There's two amendments. You want to have them read in now?
Would you like both of them read in one at a time so we can move each one?
Okay.
Need to remove one. Would the reading clerk please do standing committee number 1 to Senate File 87?
Senate File number 87, standing committee amendment number 1, page 2, line 19.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 87. And basically, Mr. Chairman, this was based on testimony that we heard from the Game and Fish Department, from our director of the labs there, that said that they could basically do the blood testing of the wolves for another canine for the $45,000 figure, and so we reduced the $100,000 to that amount of $45,000.
Thank you, Senator Peterson. Discussion on this amendment. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge you to vote yes on this amendment, and when you see the next amendment, you'll understand why.
Further discussion on Standing Committee number 1, Senate File 87. Seeing none, ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion to adopt Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 87, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. The motion to adopt Standing Committee has passed. Back on the bill, Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, if we could read the next amendment in, please.
Reading clerk, please.
Senate File 7, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 5 through 8.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and I will address it when we get there. Mr. Chairman, this is an interesting concept that I ran across with a constituent last year. And my first response to him was he was crazy. What he said was that there was data to prove that canine could carry brucellosis of bordis. And since we have a couple of canines living up in the northwest part of the state, his idea was that these canine wolves up north could actually be carrying the disease and moving it around not only from the cattle but to the elk. And I started to think about it a little bit, so I got on the internet and I started to do a little research on it. And I found this should be in all your boxes, this report here. And basically what happened in South Korea, they had a dairy farm. Cows got abortus, so they killed them. And when they were replacing the herd, they started getting it again. And they went and stepped back and tried to take a look at, what's common here. What did we not do? Did we not scrub the barns down? Do we have to burn them? All that kind of stuff. Somebody said, well, what about the dogs? So they tested the dogs, and lo and behold, the dogs had abortus. And so they went to their study, and they grabbed a dog, out in a brucellosis-free herd, and then they had these three dogs in the herd there at the farm. And what they came down with, conclusion was, you can see about halfway through the page, of highlighted right next to number 3, is that they said that they could get dogs to go to carry it, not only dog to dog, cattle to dog, dog to cattle, and dog to human. So what you see now is that these dogs could get abortus from the cows, or the cows could get it from them, or they could give it to the dairy farmers. So when I read that, I thought, this is kind of scary. I mean, to think about it, if it's true in the dogs, and the wolf is a canine and a big or ugly dog, so maybe the wolves can get it. So I dug a little further, and you don't have this in your box, but I found another one, a report on a test where they infected some wolves with brucellosis, and they carried it. And they carried the disease. And I dug a little deeper, and I found another one where they tested 14 dogs, and they did the same thing. Then I dug a little deeper, and I found out where we've already done the test on coyotes, and coyotes can carry it back and forth. Not quite as good as the dogs did, but they can carry it. And then got a little deeper, Mr. Chairman, found out not only can this pass back and forth between dogs and cattle and dogs and people, but there's some studies out there that are saying that they can also go into foxes. In Argentina, they found it going into the black-backed jackal, the spotted hyena, wild hunting dogs in Tanzania, and gray foxes. And again, this study picked up on the fact that they had them in the coyotes. So we have little studies going back and forth around the world here, and what we're finding in these studies is the dogs can catch it. And not only can they catch it, they can catch brucellosis canine. And if they have that strain, then it would do everything to them that brucellosis does to the cattle and the elk. They'll abort, they'll have fevers and stuff like that. But they can carry the brucellosis abortus, which then it doesn't really affect them, but then they can go give it to the cows and the elk and the bison and whatever else. If it would follow through for what they learned in South Korea with this dairy farm. So, Mr. Chairman, I look at it a little bit more. And we've historically stated in this state, and some may agree and disagree, that when the elk get the brucellosis, that we're trying to hook it onto the feed grounds. You bring all these elk in, and when they abort, the other elk come over there and nudge the fetus and try to wake it up, you know, like they have in their instinct, and then they get it. But, Mr. Chairman, there's kind of a different thing that's happened this year, and that's that we've had an increase in the brucellosis in the elk, about 30% increase between Cody and the park. And, Mr. Chairman, I looked on the map, and you know, I talked to some folks. There's no feeding grounds between Cody, Wyoming, and Yellowstone Park. But yet we have this big jump in brucellosis in the elk. So you have to kind of do what the dairy farmers did. You got to back up a little bit and say, okay, what is it that's common over in the Jackson area, over where the other feed grounds are that the state run, and what's common over there? It's wolves. We've got them in both areas. Now, I also looked and I found a report that the state was in on by Dr. John Fisher from Athens, Georgia, and Dr. Stephen Smith. And this is a report on wildlife diseases in Wyoming. And, Mr. Chairman, in this report, it talks about how we went in and with the brucellosis task force, and we tried to vaccinate some bison. Matter of fact, in 2004, we vaccinated 113 calf and yearling bison. And Mr. Chairman, later in this report, it talks about how we went in and we did the same thing in the elk feeding grounds, and we vaccinated 2,569 elk calves in 19 different feeding grounds. Mr. Chairman, I have to kind of go back in my history. When I was in the Navy, I was a corpsman, medical, and I didn't get to go to Vietnam. I got out of all my training right when it was ending. But I remember a lot of the guys that came back from Vietnam, and they had a form of gonorrhea that we couldn't treat. We didn't have a vaccination, or we didn't have an antibiotic strong enough to kill this strain of gonorrhea. And what would happen is if the guys were over there and there was three documented cases of a venereal disease in their medical record, they kicked them out. So rather than getting kicked out, especially if they'd been in for a couple of terms and they were going to retire out of the military, or they didn't want somebody back home to know about it, they would go down on the black market and buy penicillin. And they'd take a couple hands full of penicillin, and they think they cured themselves. But indeed what they did, Mr. Chairman, is they increased the strength of the chain. The chain of gonorrhea that was going around, they made it stronger. And every time they went out and somebody else got the benefit of this disease the next time around, and they did the same thing. It got stronger and stronger. So they had a strain of gonorrhea over there that they couldn't cure because they ran out of antibiotics that were strong enough. So, Mr. Chairman, the question that came to my mind, remembering back all those years ago when the military and the drug companies were really working hard to find that new, really strong antibiotic that would get rid of that, is that when we tried to vaccinate the elk, and we tried to vaccinate the bison, and we have never used this vaccine in a lab on elk or bison, just cattle, and from what I understand, it's very expensive to develop these vaccines because it's such a small market, and nobody did it. Did we indeed mutate it? We don't know. Mr. Chairman, when I got on that train of thought, I went out and found me another study that was done. And this study, once again by a bunch of big smart scientists around the world. And what this study did is they went in and they looked at all the different strains of brucellosis. And what they came out of the study with is that All of these strains, when you look at their DNA and everything, are really close together. So it's hard sometimes when you have some mutating that you look out there and say, well, that really is this strain. You got to do cultures. You got to take it to the next step. And any of you guys have been on the brucellosis task force or in the ag committee a whole lot longer than my 1 month on it, I've probably heard this and are aware of it. So, Mr. Chairman, the question that I would pose on this idea is, first of all, when you talk to the vets and you talk to the people around Wyoming, most of them are just like I was when I first heard this idea. You've got to be crazy to think that the wolves are carrying any kind of brucellosis. All they do is chase elk down and cattle down and eat them, or kill them and then leave them. But, Mr. Chairman, in this same study on the disease on Wyoming elk and wildlife, it talked about how they went in and they found afterbirth and aborted fetuses, and they watched them. They all moved. The ones that were still there the next couple of days, they all moved. One of them moved several hundred yards across a frozen lake. And, Mr. Chairman, we know that the wolves, and by the way, when they moved, they had wolf tracks all around them. We know that the wolves are going in there and picking up what's left over from the spontaneous abortion or from the afterward. We know they're doing that. We don't know how far they're taking them because we only watched it once or twice. But we know they're doing it. Mr. Chairman, in all the studies that if you really want to get deep into this and obsessed with it like somebody I know, you'll find out that dogs in these kennels can pass it back and forth to each other through their fluids, their urine, their feces, their sperm, in the females, any kind of discharge that they may have. That's what they're using to pass it back and forth with. Mr. Chairman, there's countries in the world right now that you cannot bring a dog into until you test it for brucellosis. Australia is one of them. South Korea, obviously, is another one. But it's out there. So, Mr. Chairman, what I did is I sat down and I thought, well, how do we do this? And I had a couple of different ideas, but the first thing we have to know are the wolves carrying it. We can't do anything until we know whether or not the wolves really have this. And, Mr. Chairman, there's only one way to do that. You got to get you some wolves. So I called the U.S. Wildlife Service. And that guy's name that we see in the paper all the time that sounds like a gun. I've known him. I know him, and I've dealt with him and wouldn't want his job. But I asked him a couple of questions. I said, do you have a medical record on all your wolves? He said, well, we could probably put something together. Why? What are you looking for? So I'm particularly interested in the first batch of wolves that you guys brought in from Canada. Did you check them out and your vet look at them? Oh, yeah. He said, did you test them for brucellosis? Silence. Well, no, we didn't. Mr. Chairman, ask him why. And here's where it was important on the answer. His answer was, because we got them from a brucellosis-free area. Mr. Chairman, he didn't tell me they couldn't get it. He told me if they got it from a brucellosis-free area. They knew that the wolves could get it, or they probably had a good idea. Or his answer would have been, they don't get it. They got them from a brucellosis-free area. And I said, well, how do you know? You didn't test them. So, Mr. Chairman, let's go to the bill. What I want to do in this bill, and as you heard, and I agree with the Appropriation Committee, is this originally wanted $100,000 to do this. But in you'll see in the amendment, originally I talked to the game and fish guy that's running the Cibble Canyon, who, by the way, is a wolf expert. And what we first developed was an idea to go out and find if the wolves had this, and then if they did, we were going to take them down there and test them live. Because you, right now, the way I understand it, and I could be corrected by one of the the guys that are really smart about brucellosis in the room than I am. But if you want to do a test in the lab, you can't use the brucellosis virus that's running around out there. They've got this special test virus that you have to use. So I guess it doesn't get loose and all that kind of stuff. So the second half of the idea on this was to go out and get some moles. I guess you make them live with the cows and the elk. I don't know. But they have a better idea of that. And the Appropriations Committee did ask us to bring some experts in. They came in. The state vet was there. The guy, the expert from Civil Canyon was there. And basically said, let's find out if they carry it first. They carry it. We show that they carry it. If they carry it in a level high enough that we can prove that they have enough of it to pass back and forth, then what we have to do is we have to put the plan together of what to do. And they're obvious then, and being scientists, the state vet and the, I guess we'll call him the state wolf expert, they were both eager to do the testing. You know, there's no slowing them down on that if we find out. So we put that aside. And Mr. Chairman, that's what the amendment we have in front of us is. So if you go to page 2, line 5, and through line 8, you notice that that's the section where we talked about bringing the puppies in and testing them. So we took that out. Let's not even address that. Let's go find out if they can do it. So, Mr. Chairman, the rest of the amendment, as it goes through there, I'll accept one thing I'll bring up, rearranges all the, you know, every place that goes back to that paragraph B, and then renumbers everything for that. Mr. Chairman, the other change is on page 3, line 10. And as you go through the bill, you'll notice, Mr. Chairman, that we had the test time that we'll go out there and get these critters ending on June 30th. But we also had the report due on June 30th of 2010. So thank you to once again to one of our great staff members for bringing that to my attention. So what we're going to do there, Mr. Chairman, is change June to August. Give the folks a couple months to get their report together before they come back. So, Mr. Chairman, with those changes in there, what we have is we have a bill here, and we may see a second reading amendment on the request of appropriations to kind of change the words in the Section 1 to where we're talking about obtained blood samples, tissue cultures of lymph nodes, and all that. We've asked the Wyoming wolf expert to give us some better words in there about what we're going to do, because what we're really going to do is every time that the feds...
Senator Jennings, can I get the question on the Committee of the Whole amendment first before we talk too much further along?
Mr. Chairman, that's a really good idea.
Well, thank you. Any discussion on the Committee of the Whole? Number one for Senate File 87? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Jennings' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole amendment number one to Senate File 87, please say aye. Opposed? Nay. The motion adopts the Committee of the Whole amendment has passed, and we are back on the bill. Senator Jennings.
Good catch, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. So bottom line, guys, ladies and gentlemen, is let's go find out. If you think that I'm as crazy as that constituent I first talked to, let's spend the $45,000. Let's go test the wolves. As the feds shoot the bad boys, we get them. We have provision for the memorandum of understanding. They said we can have them. I've also asked the wolf expert and the state vet to come up with the protocol of how to bring them down. Most of that $45,000 is transportation to get the carcasses from up there to Laramie. I've already had calls of people volunteering to do it, so we may not even spend the money. So, Mr. Chairman, I think what we do here is, if you believe they can't carry it and they can't transmit it, you should vote yes and prove all of us crazy guys that think they can wrong. But, Mr. Chairman, on the other hand, if you think there's the slightest possibility those wolves have been carrying brucellosis, I think it's imperative that we pass this study, because if you look north, there's a guy that sits on the bench and wears a black robe that just said in our wolf plan that these wolves need to be running throughout the state. Mr. Chairman, if this is true and those wolves are allowed to run throughout the state, then the members in this body that have cattle, sell them and eat them. Because with wolves running through the state carrying brucellosis, you're out of business. Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions, and I hope we get a favorable vote on this.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Vasey.
In their right mind would ever get up on a Friday afternoon and talk about a three-letter title that's so sacred to all of our hearts, wolf brucellosis testing. To cut out half of the debate, I want to make sure that wolf and testing, I'm not against paws testing. So that takes the education advocates out of that one. The reason for my no vote in this is and maybe I heard the testimony in the committee a little different, but both the state vet and the wildlife people said yes, they'd read studies, they'd even done some themselves, and sure enough, there was a brucellosis in wolves that they tested. They had no problem with continuing the test, but it never did. The amount never rose to the level of infection. The level to infect it had to be from the aborted feces or the feces of the elk, not the whatever it is, the elk when they have their calves. At that rises to a certain level. As far as the other part of it, you know, an old guy told me one time that he'd never had a sexually transmitted disease and he hoped he never got it again. But we know this. We know this. The scientists know this and everything else. But the thing about it, in good science, you have to have some kind of control. I mean, you'll pick this up and it could mutate. Everything the good senator said could happen. But you have to have some control on the other side. One of the reasons that the modified weather thing is so successful, very expensive, but so successful is they run these tight controls on it to make sure where that snow, where that's going. So at the end of several years, we'll know that. But if you look at the handout, this was done in South Korea, which I'm sure is a model of sanitary dairies. They put in several female dogs with 131 cattle in close proximity, and then the cattle had brucellosis, and they killed 84 head of the cattle, and then they sure enough tested the dogs and found that there were titers of a certain level of brucellosis. That seems to be the scientific community knows that, but what level it rises. Now, when we get to wolves and how, and the next step of this now, when we find out things we already know, that, you know, next year we'll come back and say, yep, sure enough, there is some brucellosis evidence in wolves, and now we're going to have to start running our control. The idea, as I heard, would take them up to Sabile Canyon and run this. But here's my question. Here's the problem I have for part. If you take an infected elk, and you put them in close proximity with a wolf, the wolf will probably eat the elk. So now in order to make sure you know the transmission happens, you have to put that same wolf in with a cow, and the elk will eat the cow, or the wolf will eat the cow, and then jump over the fence and eat the sheep. There just doesn't seem to be a control. So I'm not saying to not vote for it, and it certainly is the title is just sacred. Wolf brucellosis testing, who could, I mean, mother and apple pie fall by the wayside, but I just sometimes, and the appropriations are about right, but I sometimes wonder if this is absolutely necessary, and I'll be curious to see how the control test goes.
Thank you, Senator Vasey. Other words of wisdom. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, a few questions about this. I guess the first question I have from the presentation made by the sponsor, he first asked if the original wolves, the original 66 wolves that were brought in, were tested. I was wondering, are there any samples left of their tissue or blood that could be tested? Barring that, is there any way that testing of brucellosis can be shown to be inherited, if it is present? Can it be shown to be inherited? And if it can be inherited, can it be shown to be inherited all the way back 10 years through 3 or 4 generations? And I'm also get a little concerned on when you've got legislation, you're directing Game and Fish to enter an MOU with somebody else who we have no control over. So we're telling them, you get an MOU with another agency who may have, as a matter of fact, may be getting orders from saying, whatever you do not go into an MOU with Wyoming Game and Fish to prove their case. And then the last thing, and you know, and I understand and agree with the point. I'm not saying I'm against this bill at all. I just have some questions about it. If the testing is done and turns out negative, okay, fine. We're just out $45,000, and we actually have a sense of comfort in that. If it turns out the tests are positive, and the, one of the last things said in the presentation was out of business, and I'm wondering if the, if it's shown that the wolves are running around northwestern Wyoming at this point and possibly north central Wyoming are positive for brucellosis, who exactly is out of business here?
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Very good questions. One of them I forgot to ask. Well, I understand you really, you need the carcass to do the deep testing that you want to do. There's a blood test that you can take that kind of gives you an indication, but if you want the right down to which strain it is and all that kind of stuff, that they need the carcass. There's lymph nodes and all kinds of tissue samples. I did not ask the feds if those carcasses were on ice someplace or anything like that. I've heard in discussion that they are, but I can't verify. I will call and find out. Second, Mr. Chairman, can they pass it from one generation to another? I, not being a scientist, but just logically to me, I would say they could, because you have the mother wolf, and she has the babies, and they're pushing around, licking, and all that kind of stuff. So my guess would be they would. Mr. Chairman, on the MOU, I've already talked to the gentleman I'd referred to with the feds that runs the program through the MOU ID in front of him. He said, if you want one, that's fine, because we're already giving you the samples. And if you want the carcasses, we'll give you the carcasses too. But having seen the moving target with them, on a few things, I thought it would be better to put it in writing. If we, you know, if we want to change that words to a little bit more MOU, if they can, you know, we can do that too. But right now, the feds didn't seem to have a problem with giving us the carcasses and letting us test them. They were kind of interested in seeing what the results would be also. But I will find the answer to, are there any carcasses left? If there are and we can use them, I think it'd be a good idea to throw those in on the test too.
Further discussion. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just for your information, I'm wondering if we may not want a second reading amendment on this to also include the National Park Service, because I just remembered about 3 or 4 years ago, those people who were on TRW at that time, we met up in Yellowstone. They actually showed us the skulls from the original wolves that were released in Yellowstone at that time. I don't know what else they might have, but I know that they do have the skulls in the park.
Further discussion on the bill, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I would think that whether the original set had them and can pass from one generation of wolves to the next is somewhat irrelevant. The question is, when the wolves go out, as I'm sure they do, I know coyotes do it, go out and eat the afterbirth, are they picking up the brucellosis from the elk, and then are they transmitting it to other animals? That's the key thing. And it's kind of irrelevant whether they're passing it from one generation to the next, because they've got plenty of ways to get exposed without doing that.
Further discussion? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 87, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 87 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 99. Would the clerk please read it in?
Senate File number 99, sponsored by Senator Hastert, Career and Technical Training Grants, and Act Relating to Labor and Employment.
You've heard the reading?
Whoop,
just a minute. I'm sorry.
It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye. Senators Bebout, Cooper, Honeycutt, Larson, and Martin. Senator Larson, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. It reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye. Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Townsend, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Larson?
I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 99 and that further reading of the bill be dispensed with. Mr. Chairman, there is two amendments, and I would ask that the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 be read in at this time.
Senate File Number 99, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 10, line 19.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Mr. Chairman, we thought this was a pretty good amendment. It was a creative way to find some funding for this educational program. But the next amendment will change that, and I think that's probably a better amendment. But at this time, I would like you to vote on this Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and the next amendment deletes this. So let's pass this amendment, not spend a lot of time on it, get on to the next amendment that deletes it. So I ask for the vote on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1.
Any questions on amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. Senator Larson.
And there is a Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 that will be read in, but at this time, to explain the bill, I would like to call on Senator Hastert.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Senate File 99, Career and Technical Training Grants. Members of the Senate, Mr. Chairman, I bring you this bill on career and technical training. Career and technical training is a vital component in preparing our workforce with the technical skills necessary to meet Wyoming's needs today and into the future. Mr. Chairman, by 2014, the Department of Employment has indicated that 77% of the jobs in Wyoming will be of the career and technical nature, which makes it even more vital that we have programs that are training the individuals for the kind of work that Wyoming is going to be needing. Mr. Chairman, one of the things that we've talked an awful lot about, we've been in many different programs, is retaining the youth in Wyoming. We all know that Wyoming is an aging state, and we want to keep our youth in the state, and this is a vehicle to help do that. By helping pay for the training and getting these individuals through the schooling and then into good-paying jobs, we hope to keep them here in the state and stay in the state here and then get into raising a family here and remain the vital parts of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, also one of the aspects of this bill would be some economic diversification. Getting into the bill, Mr. Chairman, page 2 of the bill gets into defining the career and technical training providers, the community colleges, private schools, University of Wyoming, and then we get into training facilities and entities approved and registered by the Office of Apprenticeship and Training from the United States Department of Labor. On the bottom of page 2, we explain what career and technical training is. On the top of page 3, Mr. Chairman, we talk about the career readiness scores, and the career readiness score means qualifying scores on multi-level readiness pre-instructional assessments. Mr. Chairman, this section here is included in recognition that industry-specific testing exists. Reading for information, applied mathematics, and locating information have been found to be critical in workplace success. And Mr. Chairman, then we go on down into definitions and defining that the department means the Department of Workforce Services, and then on to how the training grants are established in 2715-102, and the department by rule and regulation to will administer the program, Mr. Chairman. And then on the next page, we get into the purpose of career and technical training by providing career and technical training grants to develop or enhance the skills of a workforce based on current, projected, or emerging labor shortages. Mr. Chairman, in discussion in committee and talking with the Department of Workforce Services, their intent in rules and regulations that they will be looking at the needs of the Wyoming workforce and tailoring the grants accordingly. As I mentioned earlier, the Department of Employment indicates that by 2014, 77% of the jobs in Wyoming will be of the career and technical nature. We go on down to the department is authorized to promulgate rules. These rules will be in consultation with the training providers and the employers. The department, in the next section, may receive donations from foundations or private sources. We didn't want to, if there was individuals or foundations that had the ability and the desire to donate to this program to provide the training grants, we had wanted that vehicle there. Then on the next page, we get into the career and technical training grants eligibility. And it provides a trainee is eligible for a grant if they meet the following qualifications. Mr. Chairman, it goes on to describe that they have to be a Wyoming resident. And one thing I want to point out in this next section, in the trainee has demonstrating Wyoming residency as determined by the eligible program at which the trainee is enrolled. There was some discussion about that, and I did some research on that, and we took this language. This language came right out of the Hathaway scholarship legislation, right out of the statutes from the Hathaway, that the graduate is a high school, has graduated from high school or has obtained an equivalency diploma, has earned a baseline career readiness score specified under this article, and then on to the next page, approved for the process, and it talks about alternative criteria. An alternative criteria could be something like if an institution has some type of training or has some type of exam, like the ACT, that is equal to or superior to what the Department of Workforce Services has. And we wanted to ensure that those type of testings would be included. So that's something that would be something like the ACT. We know that institutions have that testing components, and we wanted to be able to recognize that in the bill, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, in the next section, the trainee will be eligible for a grant under this article for no more than 5 years. That way, the studies have shown that if an individual takes 5 years to get through a college course, and that's what statistics have shown, that a lot of times it does take 5 years to get through a complete college course to give them that opportunity, but by then no means more than 6 years. And Mr. Chairman, on page six down towards the bottom there gets into that he is not eligible for a training grant if he is not a United States citizen, and then on to the next page is not complied with the United States Selective Service System, is in default of a federal title, for education loan, owes a refund, is incarcerated, and then on to the next page, has been convicted of a felony. And then on to, does not otherwise qualify. Then, Mr. Chairman, we get into, on the middle of page 8, the funding awards. And the funding awards for the two, what we were very specific and wanted to do here, we didn't want kids, the intent here is we didn't want kids to get out of the success curriculum in the high schools that we've established through the Hathaway program. So the idea here is to separate them out from 2 years after they were eligible or would have been eligible for the Hathaway program from graduating from high school. And we have an amendment, Mr. Chairman, because the language doesn't quite fit, because we realized after discussion that in receipt of a general equivalency diploma, that you, the way it's worded, you could be 30 years old and then only be eligible for the smaller amount of money. So there's an amendment, Mr. Chairman, coming up that kind of cleans that up a little bit to be specific to the fact that we are very intent on the fact that we don't want to encourage kids away from the success curriculum. We want them to go through that, and that if they don't do that, and if they're coming out of high school or have a GED, that they won't be eligible for 75% of the opportunity scholarship, Mr. Chairman. Now, we're encouraging and would have a lot of what we call non-traditional type of students that, you know, once they have been out in the workplace, or even we can, you know, this can be an encouragement towards women into non-traditional employment, where if later in life they have an ability or desire to change occupations and want to get into this program, it would be available for them, and that would be at 100% of the performance scholarship, and just kind of keeping it in line with what we're doing with the Hathaway, Mr. Chairman. And then into the department will pay the cost of an eligible applicant's initial test. If they're required to take additional testing, that will be at the applicant's own expense. And then on to the next page, we get into the career and technical training grants agreement, where in order to get the payments, that they have to enter into a written agreement. And Mr. Chairman, on line 8, we're going to change the word from industry to trade if we pass the amendment. It made more sense to talk about a trade instead of the industry, a trade that they were being traded in. That way they could you can go into multiple industries, but if you're trained in a specific trade as an electrician, then you certainly remain qualified you can move to different industries, but still remain in that trade, Mr. Chairman. And this is one of the nice things about this particular proposal, is that we're unable to do in the Hathaway because of the wide gamut of disciplines an individual can get a degree in. In this particular case, we're tailoring it towards and structuring it towards what an individual could want and need in the state of Wyoming and what the needs are for the state of Wyoming. And this has a payback provision that if we pay for your schooling, you have to sign a written agreement that you're going to stay in the state. And much like we do in the WAMI program. And that's where the studies have shown and statistics have shown that if we can keep you in the state for so long, you're liable to stay. And that's, Mr. Chairman, is an enhancement and a help and assist in helping keep younger people in the state. And then we talk about later on if a trainee breaches the agreement, the fact that the state can, seek remuneration for those. Then on page 10, requiring a legislative report, and then in section 2, getting into the appropriation, which the second committee's amendment addresses, Mr. Chairman. So that's basically the bill. We're certainly looking to help with the training of individuals and asking them to, there's be a benefit to the state by having them get into a contract and remain in the state of Wyoming. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, and I think we have the second committee's amendment to work with, and that's basically the bill, and I'll stand for questions, and we'll discuss the other amendment.
Would the clerk please read in the second amendment?
Senate File 99, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, delete the first Senate Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 99. Folks, we thought this program ought to start off a little bit slower. We reduced the appropriation to $1 million. The previous committee had recommended a portion of the dollars come out of the Hathaway account. There is a practical problem right now. The Hathaway account doesn't have the money to supply it. It has not been kicking out or distributing enough dollars into the income account to operate this. In fact, you'll see when we run the budget, we're going to give the state treasurer some authority to borrow intermittently if necessary until capital gains start returning. But once again, since we don't profile capital gains, all you'd look at is the net income based upon present projections, which shows insufficient money to even pay our present obligations over the course of a long time. Then there's an issue as to whether or not the Cathaway should be extended to these purposes anyway. But you don't have to get to the second question because there's no excess money to kick off. The second thing we did is, if you look at mid-page of the amendment, we said, from the funds that we do give to you, you must encumber the entire cost of any grant so that if a student is a 3 or 4 or 5 year program, you have to, whatever you promise, you have to set aside the entire dollars from the promise right then. And the purpose for that is that they don't take $1 million out and go promised loans where they would have, we'd be paying the first year and then come back to us the next year and say, by the way, we either have to terminate the program or you need to appropriate for the subsequent years. And we have similar concepts in the Hathaway program where we actually make sure that we encumber and set aside enough dollars for the entire length of the scholarship. We allow those dollars to be, they need to have some regulation as to when the grants terminate, and if the grants terminate, they can take the terminated dollars, put them back into the program, and we provide that while there is a date that the dollars revert, that to the extent that they've committed dollars, those don't revert until the grants would terminate. So it's a protection device to make sure we pay as we go. And with that, I would urge your support of the amendment.
Questions on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion on amendment number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, just a question so I'm clear on this. The either one of the amendments, the bill that we're now dealing with, the amended bill we're now dealing with, is a $1 million appropriation. And then on page 11, lines 7 and 8, and I don't see those deleted in either of the amendments, says this appropriation shall be included in the department's 2011 and 2012 standard biennial budget. So this will become an ongoing program. And does that mean that it'll be now a $2 million budget item since it'll be a biennial budget for 2011 or $1 million for the 2 years?
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I reluctantly just have a couple of questions. I like where the heart is with this. One is in relation, I really applaud the standing committee amendment that we just adopted, because one of the big questions that I really had with this bill was when we can't meet the obligations that we have currently under our Hathaway program, I just wonder about the wisdom of going forth with a brand new program
that it's not an ongoing program
that is quite... quite expensive. The other question relates to this. We contributed recently to a nonprofit organization which does a wonderful job of training our women in work exactly like is described in this bill. The second thing is I'm very much aware of a college up in the center part of the state having some opportunities in trade programs that are not being met now. Now, are those situations full rides? Maybe not quite, but there's scholarship opportunities and opportunities in these trade programs that we're not filling now. And so I guess I just have a question about whether or not this might be government funding that's replacing some things that we're already doing.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a good senator from Natrona County brings up some points I hadn't even thought of about this particular bill, but I would say that I applaud the sponsors. I think this is a great idea and needed because some people won't fit into how the Hathaway ran. The curriculum, maybe they didn't make it there, and then they'll see the light eventually, or others that never had an opportunity at. So I think it's a needed program. I just don't think this bill is ready. And I have several issues with it, starting with page 3, where it goes career readiness scores means qualifying scores on a multi-level career readiness pre-instructional assessment tool. It doesn't say anybody has any approval over that. It does say below that you'll have proficiency, they'll show, demonstrate some proficiency in reading, apply to math, locating information, and additional skills necessary to meet business and industry skill demands. It doesn't say anybody's going to approve it. So if you have a training program and you just put, you know, can you count to 10 and give me the alphabet and you pass that, apparently you would be allowed in. That seems a little bit loose on that. You go to page 5. It talks about demonstrated on line 12 through 14, demonstrated Wyoming residency is determined by the eligible program. Now, I know the sponsor brought up the fact that he mentioned eligibility and he referenced the Hathaway. Well, that's a high school graduate, as far as I know, in the high for Hathaway to come up with that. This is saying determined by the eligible program. So, once again, your program says you can pass our assessment test right up front. You can come and join our program because we don't really have residency requirements. I guess if you showed up, you're in Wyoming, you must be a resident. And then they repeat that readiness score, lines 21 through 24 at the bottom of that page, for the training to be undertaken. Then they mention that the department can promulgate rules or put in rules, approve processing alternative criteria. And there may be in these reasons a need for some alternative criteria as to how you get into the program. Then you go over on page 6 and you get the B and it says, no trainee shall be eligible for the grant under this article for more than the equivalent of 5 years. That's 10 semesters. That is a long time. And it can be continuous from what this doesn't say. It's not continuous or it can only be for so long at any period of time. It just says 5 years. And then you go down to line 11. It says, starting with line 8, for purposes of subsection training's initial eligibility shall be deemed to commence when the state is obligated to reimburse an eligible program for the trainee's grant under this article. So if you're in for a year before they even bill for this, you've got 5 years on top of the year you were just in. I mean, that's potential. That's not what they intended, but I think that would need to be corrected to say eligibility must start, I would assume, the day you start into the training program. Go over to page 8. I would say at the top of page 8, one of the persons that is not eligible for this program is convicted of a felony. I can tell you that's some of the group that probably needs the training as much as anybody, if not more. They already have obstacles in front of them. Yes, they made a huge mistake in their past life. But going forward, they need the most help. Otherwise, we have a recidivism, which is a word that I don't say very well, would go up or will maintain the same, which is horrible in itself. So I think that part should be struck. And once again, we say in rules and regulations, so I do allow that leeway that the department can do some rules and regulations to take care of some of the issues I'm speaking of, but we don't write it down, but yet we stop this particular segment of our society from participating. So then you get down to line 8 through 17, where we're doling out the money. Very confusing paragraph. It says, for the first 2 year period following trainee's graduation from high school, or receipt of a general equivalency diploma, which then followed Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 that said receipt of a general equivalency diploma if the general equivalency diploma is received before the recipient is 21 years old. So if you're up to 21, you do your GED, or you're 20, you're under that two-year window that you came out of high school, you only get 75% of the opportunity. The opportunity is $800 a semester, which means you'd get about, somebody do the quick math for me, about $600 a semester. And then you move on to 3 years if you're in that group. You move on for the next 3 years, you can get 100% of the performance scholarship, which is $1,200 a semester, $2,400 a year. But if you started after you were 21 years old, which is what this is pretty much for anybody who's eligible to get into this. So you start after 21 years old, you got 5 years, $2,400 a year. So if you want to do the math on that, whatever that is, $11,000, $12,000 you get. Should you have stayed in school? Should you have gone through the success curriculum, made the ACT scores you needed? Your best bet is $9,600 if you make the opportunity, or performance, excuse me. If you qualify with a 3.0 GPA and a 21 ACTs, if I'm correct on that, and I might have them mixed up a little bit, your best bet is you'll get $9,600. And you have to do that in 8 semesters with a 2-year window to accept it and begin some deviations for religious military service and a few other issues. So suddenly we're creating this other scholarship, and the good sponsor said, we're not trying to entice students to leave high school early. You want to game the system, folks. Get out of high school as soon as you turn 18. Go to the oil field and get $60,000 to $80,000 a year. Buy the brand new pickup, and as an 18-year-old kid, you're living high on the hog. And then wait a couple years, or wait till you're after you're 21, 2 years out of high school, or, well, if you need your GED, wait till you're 21 to get it. Then start in one of these programs. And you'll have 5 years of $11,000, $12,000 to spend. Now, none of these programs should cost that. I don't know what you're after, but in reality, this is, since community college and university are involved in this, you can go get your degree and have more money than the ones that stuck it out. Now, I may be reading this wrong, but that is, and it is just my interpretation. Go to page 9. Talks that you'll stay in Wyoming and work. We don't know how long and for how long. Doesn't define what working in Wyoming is. So then I start thinking about these businesses that ship people out of state, or maybe need to work a month in here in Rock Springs, you need to work a month in the new oil fields of developing in Utah. Is that working in our state? Is the company you're working for, is that the designator? If it's a corporation registered in Wyoming, you're good? Or do you just physically have to work within our borders? I'm not sure. That's not defined. Then how long? Well, if we're going to spend that kind of money, we're talking about half the cost of an advanced nursing degree, roughly, which we just passed. They're around for a couple of years. Most outfits move, if you're in the millwright business, shovels, drag lines, that kind of business, you're going to spend, they'll have a job in the Powder River Basin for you, maybe for the year, maybe get on the tail end of one, but their next job will be in Coal Strip, Montana. Their next job will be in copper areas of Arizona. And you need to move with that. Well, if it's only for a few weeks payback, then we need to know that. A few weeks payback, great, that works real well. How about tracking these people? You're going to produce hundreds of these. These people are going to be dispersed all over the place. The cost of tracking, I don't know that it's in here. There is some money for the workforce services, I understand that. But is there enough to track all that for how long? Then you talk about certain businesses pay per hour for training. Are we supplanting other businesses, private industry that is paying? There's a wonderful training center in the great city of Casper. And a lot of the contractors in the construction road business pay per hour to that facility. Now, that facility is now going to be able to train those people on state money. What happens to that money? And this goes for many other organizations, too. So I think there needs to be an amendment in here that would say that you can't supplant existing training dollars. It can only work on top of that. There is a lot of... I like the idea because I've always fought for CTE, Career Technical Education. But I see so many loopholes in here, and you can't do it through rules and regulations. And if we leave that kind of money as for training funds in here, that is a lot of money. And I can see people gaming the system. I don't even know. I think that's pretty much the rest of the bill. I think this bill needs to be laid back and worked on. And I'd be glad to work with the sponsor to come up with something that answers all my questions and we bring it back again. So I would ask for your no vote on this particular bill.
Senator Hassert, you have the third amendment. Would you like that read in now?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File Number 99, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 4, line 4.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 99 and ask that further reading of the amendment be dispensed with. Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate, a couple of these are just some cleanup language on page 4, line 4, deleting the primary reason for the career and technical, and on page 5, line 4, deleting a grant. And then getting into page 8, line 10, and discussing what the previous speaker just talked about a little bit here, and after diploma, inserting that if in the general equivalency diploma is received before the recipient is 21 years old. That was needed because the way it read was that if you were 30 years old and got your GED, that you still would only be eligible for the smaller amount of money. And then delete the word industry, as I discussed, and insert the word trade. So that's the amendment, Mr. Chairman. If we can dispense with the amendment, then I'll talk further on the bill. So I move the amendment at this time.
Questions on the amendment? Senator Von Platen.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize to the body. I thought that amendment had been written, read in and moved. So my apologies.
Any other questions on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Hassert's motion on Standing Committee Amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Back on the bill. Senator Hassert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will try and get to all of the questions here. I believe the amendment for the good senator back there does, our amendment from the second committee does strike out the language for the, this will not be in the department's ongoing budget. This is something that they will have to come back for in the future and request. And it does show that in the standing committee amendment number 2. Mr. Chairman, as for replacing any type of other system with the government system, I think that we're enhancing, you know, this one here has a buyback or payback provision, and is we're getting a benefit to the state. Anytime you have an opportunity to enhance training, I think we're always doing, you know, something positive there. Now, as far as the, I'm going to try and take care of these as we go along here through the bill, Mr. Chairman. I know there was several concerns raised, and as far as the on page 3, which would be the section 3 of the career readiness scores, means qualified scores on a multi-level career readiness pre-instructional assessment. Now, as I discussed, that's something that could be there. We're conscious of the fact that other entities and other industries have training programs. Now, what that could say with the simple amendment and discussed that it mentioned to the good senator from Campbell County was that we insert the words approved by the department. So that way, if they have other types of training programs, we're simply saying that, you know, that they would have to be approved by the department. And I think that would lend itself to a comfort zone in ensuring that the department looks those over. Mr. Chairman, the next one I had here was on page 5. The eligibility as far as Wyoming residency. Now, in looking at this and taking the language from the Hathaway, we did look at the university and community colleges do have one-year eligibility requirements for a residency, and other programs were kind of all over the map. Mr. Chairman, if, you know, that's certainly something we can discuss, and if this bill were to pass Committee of the Whole onto this second reading amendment, and maybe to put it more in line with what the community colleges and the universities, and stipulate that it would be, and be clear that it would be 1 year of residency as per, you know, the community colleges and the University of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, I did discuss with the attorneys, and I think it was on page 6, and under line 10, when we talk about the trainee's initial eligibility shall be deemed to commence when the state is obligated to reimburse the eligible program. Now, there was some discussion about this language, and I certainly agree that we can look at something along the lines of commence when the individuals enters into the training program. That way, there isn't any individual or any entity out there that you could say play games with as far as when they first start to build a department. I certainly would think that, you know, they would be up front and just begin to build that up front, but I think that we can certainly look at changing that to an individual enters into the program, and that way it would tighten that up and just be specific to when they were doing that. Mr. Chairman, there was certainly concerns raised on the amount of time that an individual would pay back the award. And we got the language that from the quality child care, and it was the intent of putting in rules and regulations, not necessarily in statute, but putting in rules and regs from the department. They have right now, for every 1,000 hours of employment, for associate's degree would be completed within 18 months of completion there, Mr. Chairman. 2,000 hours would be 24 months, and on to 750 hours, Mr. Chairman, for postgraduate endorsement would be 12 months. So there is some guidelines that they had intended on taking from the quality child care bill, Mr. Chairman, that is in rules and regs there. So there is some guidelines there that we had or that the department had intended on using in rules and regulations, Mr. Chairman. And then the piece on working in Wyoming, if an individual goes to work for a company that's in the state of Wyoming, and the company moves them from moves them to another state to perform some duties. It is, in talking with the department this morning, it's their intent to have that still qualify. It certainly is. I know that there are some industries out there that a person could be working for company X and working in the state, but then company X says, well, we have some work that we need you to do for outside of Wyoming, but the person still resides here, there's still money's coming back here, and that certainly is the intent of the organization to say, you know, that still qualifies you as far as your payback provisions. And Mr. Chairman, so, and as far as the, I noticed that we had talked about the felony portion of that, and that, Mr. Chairman, the rest of the paragraph, it said it being convicted of a felony, and has not been granted exemptions pursuant to the rules adopted by the department. It wasn't going to be ironclad that if they were convicted of a felony that they weren't going to be eligible, that it was just going to be some guidelines put in there for that. So, Mr. Chairman, I hope that answers some of the questions that were raised on this.
Senator Perkins, if you'd indulge me just a minute, I have reason to believe that through a note that anybody who will be looking for the lights of their town as they're driving home tonight, there are no restrictions on it, and as you're driving home in the dark, you will be able to see your town.
Okay. All right.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe we'll get, I don't know. I thought maybe we'd get there before dark, but I don't think we're headed that way this afternoon. I just do have a couple questions. I have three questions for the sponsors. The first one, I just want to make sure I understand a couple things. The first one is on page 2. beginning on line 20, as we define career and technical training. In there, you've got the training provider that develops, enhances the skills of an individual or specific for specific careers that are based in manual or practical activities. I mean, obviously, I'm assuming that obviously would mean building trades, but is that would that extend to massage therapy or hair design or hair cutting? And I wouldn't there's not anything necessarily wrong with those. I'm just wondering if it's intended to be that broad and that's the intent. That's question one. Question two I have for you has to do with the qualifications that start on page 5. And so this is the trainee qualifications. And as I read those, I'm wondering about the requirements for specific ties to the state of Wyoming and the potential for those to be manipulated. Let me explain further. What you have, and these were taken very, very close parallel out of the Hathaway. But the big difference between this and the Hathaway is on line 18, on lines 18 and 19. Here you have graduated from high school or has obtained a general equivalency diploma. The language out of Hathaway, it's graduation or obtaining the GED from what's called a qualifying institution or something like that. And then you go look at that definition of that in Hathaway, and ultimately that's going to be an institution, a high school, a Wyoming high school, or a Wyoming GED program, or homeschooled in Wyoming. And so what you have is without that language on 18 and 19, basically it's the high school graduation, the GED can be from any place in the country or any equivalency in the world, and you would still qualify here. The only restriction on Wyoming residency or ties to Wyoming is on that same page on lines 12 through 14, where you've demonstrated residency as determined by the eligible program. That obviously, I think, creates potentially some opportunity for abuse. But just as an example, University of Wyoming, I think that if you're a, maybe they've changed that, but I think if your parent or your in-law was an alumnus, you qualify for resident tuition. And so I'm pointing that out. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I'm just wondering if that's the intent to be that broad. That's the second question, is on the residency issues. The third question I have for you is, as I read this, I became concerned, or at least maybe it's intentional, but ultimately it seemed to me that an enterprising but indecisive young man or woman could go through 5 semesters of Hathaway, go out and... well, not even necessarily. I don't know that it even has to be a break, but ultimately if you went out and did 5 years at Hathaway to get your degree, then you went out to be an accountant or something, and then you decided you didn't like that, you'd rather be have a manual trade, that you go back and get another 5 under this. And I didn't see anything in there that would prohibit that. Maybe that's a good policy choice, but nevertheless, it seemed to me that enterprising young person could potentially be collecting the top level for up to 10 years on this thing. And I was wondering if that was intended, because I didn't see anything that would prohibit that.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, trying to answer some of the questions here. On page 2, line 20, as far as the career and technical training, the intent and what would be in rules is that, and what we're speaking about in this bill, is that this is going to be, the department is going to look at the needs of Wyoming's industries and tailor priorities towards that. So what you're going to be looking at is, and I can tell you from personal experience that my industry, the Trona industry, I work for one of the specific companies there, has been in search for an electrician for to fill their electrical department for several years and has been unable to do that. So, this is the type of thing that, this is going to be focused towards. As far as the as the language on graduating from a high school that was intended that way, to leave it that way. I mean, just how many of us here have graduated from a Wyoming high school? There's a couple, but I mean, those that are moving into the States, you certainly don't want to inhibit those. This is targeted at also for non-traditional types of individuals, Mr. Chairman. So the intent is, you don't have, if you moved here from Michigan, Ohio, Montana, wherever, and graduated from a high school, have a high school diploma, or a qualified GED, it doesn't matter where. We didn't want to be specific to Wyoming because there are individuals that will be here from other states to that have graduated. So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a general comment. You know, we've created some really very worthwhile programs starting right here on this floor in the past. Hathaway, Excellence in Higher Education. I remember we authorized a $15 million vocational education facility in Gillette with one paragraph. If we had to undergo the scrutiny and the questioning in all those programs, they would never have been formed or created. Instead, we worked together. I remember working with a former senator from Rock Springs on a nursing loan program in order to get the wording down. It went through three readings here, and it took forever to do it, but it was a very fine program. And the way that we did it is folks who had questions came to the sponsors, and we sat right there at that table, and we worked them out. Now, if we have to go through this bill and explain what working in Wyoming means, then we're never going to do it. And these folks who are working in these programs that these programs are trying to reach will remain outside of our ability to try to constructively put them in our workforce. Now, a lot of the questions were answered, and there are still some good questions out there, and I suggest that we have the weekend to work this thing over and to do it. And we can work it over, meaning that we can work with the sponsor and work this thing through, or we can work over the bill and kill it on general file.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And folks, as you begin to look at these bills and creating programs, they obviously, if we could help every person and go give every person a grant to go out and achieve their life's desires, that would be great. But that's not the really the function of government in all instances. I just think you're sitting here, we've got a WAMI program, doctors and dentists, we've got nursing programs, we've got workforce development, we've got Hathaway. And I guess part of the problem is I have the disadvantage and curse with the knowledge of all the things that we turned down in the supplemental budget request to get here. And I guess we give you a list of things that we intended to fund. What we ought to start doing is giving you a list of everything that we didn't fund. And as you start looking forward, in trying to assess the levels of priorities, I'm worried more that we can afford the nursing program next year. Can we afford continue to afford to pay the WAMI program? Can we continue to afford the Hathaway? Workforce development is an interesting thing. When we gave the workforce development dollars out, what we found is that companies were very skilled at essentially dumping their cost that they should have had for their own workforce development on the state. And those people that had recruiters and trained folks that were out there trying to take advantage of state funds were gobbling them all up, no longer sending their folks to manager training. They expect the state to do it. And at some point, you have to take a step back and say, who are you targeting? What are you targeting? Is it a state responsibility? And if so, how do we do it? And I submit, and I agree with my colleague from Albany County, that a lot of great plans do get created on a paragraph. Having said that, some plans do require interim study. And some plans, you need to step back and say, what are we doing with our workforce development dollars? What are we doing with our Hathaway dollars? Where are the overlaps? Where are they not? Is this a targeted way?
And believe me, by the time, over the course of the next week, you're going to be making some tough decisions, and they are tough. And so I'd urge caution to creating new programs when we're on the, embarking on an instance where, frankly, I'm not sure that we're going to be able to pay for all the other programs at the levels that we have.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had not planned on standing up again. I thought I said more than I should have, probably. And I think it's been reiterated to me that I probably did. But I will tell you that the $15 million project was actually $16.7 million. It wasn't a footnote in the budget. It was actually a bill. But I will also tell you that, and I believe exactly what the tall senator from Albany County said, was that you shouldn't start chopping up on a bill without having some explanation prior to you doing that. Go to the sponsor. My first contact with the sponsor, actually the author of this, was in October, another one in December. My only answer I got back was a, because I wasn't sure how DOL certified training programs, which is mentioned in here. That's about all I had for answers. Sat down with the sponsor yesterday, gave him all my concerns, expected to see a list of amendments to address them or tell me I was full of it, to put it in nice terms. But that didn't happen. So I really had to express my concerns to this body, and I did so.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Larson's motion, then when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 99, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
Thank you. Division. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. Senate File 99 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The passionate and concerning Majority Floor Leader.
Flattery will get you nowhere. Very good week, members of the Senate. At this point, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had in consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 87, do pass amended. Senate File 99, do pass amended. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
Senator Bebout. I mean, excuse me. I'm pushing the wrong button. Senator DeGeni.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole report. Is that close enough?
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
As opposed, no. Motion passed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate be adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday morning.
Announcements. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in the committee room. House Bill 119, Genetic and Metabolic Disease Programs.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet 30 minutes after the noon recess on Monday in S-18 to consider House Bill 156, Engrossed Energy Performance Contracting 2, House Bill 251, Trust Retirement Funds Accounting, and House Bill 71, Film Industry Financial Incentive.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet on Monday to consider the following bills. House Bill 64, Prescription Drug Fraud Felony, House Bill 150, Peace Officer Detention, and House Bill 165, Adult Adoption at 8 a.m.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. And ladies and gentlemen, your budget bills have been distributed, so if you want to take them over the weekend, you can't sleep well. They're Senate file number one, and they're in your drawers if you'd like to look at them. The budget runs on Tuesday.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number six, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Tuesday, 20 minutes after the lunch recess, up in S-14 to take up House Bill 6, Engross Game and Fish Trapping, House Bill 48, Engross Game Bird Farms Raising Sage Grouse, or whichever, and House Bill 225, Engross Bighorn Sheep, Ewe, and Lamb Licenses.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just very quickly, one more day left on General File, House of Origin. As you can tell, there are three bills up there. We should be okay, so don't despair if one of your bills is up there. I would simply say that you have done well.
You've heard the motion. The Senate shall adjourn until 10 a.m. 10 a.m. Monday morning, February 9th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. We are adjourned.